ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Your company just announced a new strategy. Do you pay attention to the slideshow that includes words like agility and innovation and think about ways you can align your team? Or do you have trouble figuring out what the strategy means for your day-to-day work? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong and you're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National, helping to make your work life better. In this episode, we make sense of strategy and why its implementation is a key skill, lest you be left out in the cold. Brandon Lee is an Associate Professor at Melbourne Business School and the Program Director of various strategic thinking programs at MBS. Welcome to This Working Life, Brandon.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Strategy often sounds lofty and theoretical and perhaps irrelevant for those of us on the coalface of an organisation. Why should we care?
How I explain strategy, it's simply a set of choices that a company makes around how they're trying to create value for themselves and for their stakeholders, and then how to capture that value over time.
Value. Explain that for us.
So value for a company is obviously sort of economic value, profitability. But then you also have value that's created for various stakeholders, for employees, for their consumers, and people that are looking for something from that company. And so the value is defined really by their willingness to pay for a particular product or service. And then they get value from consuming that product or service, and then the company obviously gets value from that economically.
So trying to define it even further, are you saying that people have needs, and when you help them with their needs, then that creates value, and that's what we're trying to do?
Absolutely. And you could also think about it as just a company that's trying to help solve someone's problem.
Okay, so then why do we need to implement or help implement the strategy?
A company can set a strategy, and if it's not implemented, then what's the point, right? And so when I think about strategy, it's setting a different aspiration from where we currently are as an organization. We want to change and grow in some way. We want to grow in terms of profitability, in terms of market share. And in order to do that, we have to actually implement the strategy, right? So implementation and the development of strategy are two sides of the same coin.
Otherwise, it's just wishful thinking.
Correct.
All right. So do you want to give us an example of a business strategy?
Well, I think a way that I think about strategy is three simple things. You can think about who, what, and how. Okay, so the who is that customer or segment that a company is trying to provide value for. The what is what they're doing, the problem that they're trying to solve. And then the how is how this company is doing it better than anybody else in the industry. And so when you're thinking about strategy, I think it's that simple. And so it's a theory, right, or our best guess of how we can create value for a particular customer and do it in a way that's better than everyone else.
Who sets the strategy?
Sort of the ritualistic way that this happens in an organization is that we tend to have an offsite, right? And so the upper echelon of the organization goes to the offsite and they spend 2 to 3 days there talking about all things strategy. And then after the 3 days, and oftentimes that last day is a fairly harried day where they're like, we've got to put something together to bring back, you know, and it's almost like Moses coming from the mountain, you know, as
they
come back.
With the one pager.
That's right, with the one pager. They come in and say, behold, here's the strategy. And everybody's trying to understand what it is, or, you know, some people disagree with it, and there's not a lot of really great reception sometimes. And so when I think about sort of this idea, you have the strategists who set the strategy, then you have the implementers, right, that are supposed to take that strategy, and then you've got everybody else in the organization. And so the implementers are meant to translate the strategy into concrete actions that are then done by everyone else. And the problem with this sort of model is that if we're establishing or creating a strategy without thinking about how implementable it is, then oftentimes it doesn't get implemented. And then when people are trying to implement it, they should be able to have a clear, coherent, and understandable and communicable strategy that they can share with everyone else.
In your experience, is this best practice to do it that way with the off-site, come up with the one pager and then try and drip feed it to everyone?
Definitely not. I think that's a bit of a loaded question, but I think absolutely not, right? I think that the idea here is that there needs to be more engagement by the people who are tasked to implement it. And the reason why that's important is, one, first of all, they have a better sense of what's happening in the organization. And then second, they actually feel a bit more motivation because they've had a part in establishing the strategy. And the other thing that I think we oftentimes neglect is the everybody else. So if you think about the people in the organization that have the most insight and knowledge about how they deliver value to customers, it's the people that are at the coalface, right? The people that are interacting with customers every day, or people that are in procurement, that are dealing with your suppliers, that have a real sense of what's happening in the external environment. And so there needs to be sort of another connecting point from everybody else up to the strategists, so that they have a really good sense of what happens. Oftentimes, those strategists sit in a bubble and are not aware of the things that are happening throughout the organization. So when I talk to my executives and my students at Melbourne Business School, I tend to talk about how do we create those information flows between the implementers and the strategists, but then also between everybody else, so that there's just a better understanding and also greater sort of commitment to the strategy itself.
Do you have a concrete example or a case study of where you've seen that information flow upwards, if you like, done well?
I work with a company. What's really interesting about them is that they really spend a lot of time talking to the people on the front line, mostly the implementers, but also sort of senior management. But then there's a lot of engagement over time as they develop the strategy, right? So the strategy should not happen in 3 days. I have in another company that I have a friend that is the chief strategy officer. She spends about 6 months with her team getting the information, mapping out the terrain to really understand what's happening in the industry, you know, what's happening with our customer segments, to really get a sense of what is the lay of the land. Because in order to navigate that land properly, you have to map that as clearly as you possibly can to be successful. And so there's a lot of engagement, a lot of experimentation, a lot of things that are tried in order to try and accomplish that.
So Brandon, we're talking about implementation there. Do you want to define it for us so that we truly understand what we mean by implementation?
So when I think about implementation, I actually think about it in a very simple way. And I think this would encompass development of strategy as well. So I think about three large buckets that we need to think about. We need to think about making choices, which is really about developing the strategy. Then we need to think about making things happen, which is about that implementation or execution. And then we need to think about a third bucket of making sense, okay? And as we make sense, that should inform our choices. And then when we make the choices, that should inform how we get things done. And then we should make sense of that.
Okay, and can you go deeper on what making sense means?
I look at it both at the organizational level and the individual level, right? So at the organizational level, this means that we have meaningful metrics, right, that allow us to make sense of the things that we try to make happen. And if we use vanity metrics, or if we use metrics that are, you know, that we've been using for 20 years that are inconsistent with the strategy, then we're not going to be making good organizational sense of what's happening on the ground.
What's an example of a vanity metric?
There can be all kinds, right? And I think it can be done. And the problem with metrics is that it's oftentimes politicized and they're used in very different ways. They can be used to prop up how good I look in the organization or how the organization looks itself. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we care about performance, we care about improvement, we care about sort of our stakeholders and customers, we need to be really clear about what we're measuring and how we think about that.
So you have a model you teach based around a circle. Talk us through your circle.
Yeah, so that's really sort of the making choices, making things happen, and making sense. When I talk about this very simple model, I ask the students, where does your company spend the majority of your time? Is it making choices? Is it making things happen or making sense? And the majority of people say, to no surprise, we spend most of our time making things happen. And then the second one, so that's probably about 70 to 80% of the class. And then about 10 to 15% of the class will say making choices. And the thing that is most neglected is making sense. And the premise here is that organizations that have created processes to go through that circle faster, if they can cycle through that faster of making choices, making things happen, and then making sense or getting feedback, and then that feedback then informs subsequent choices, right? That is an organization that's going to tend to be more high-performing.
It's like the prototype test model, trying to
do it.
Yeah,
build, test, learn kind of thing. So you can think about sort of lean startup. A lot. This is a very common model, but I think it's, and it's been around for ages, but I think it's just really simple and powerful. And the executives that I teach really grasp onto this, and they recognize, I am not spending enough time making sense. I'm not spending enough time personally to synthesize the information that I'm getting, the data that we're capturing, what's happening organizationally. They need to spend more time in that bucket of making sense.
I went deeper on what making sense means for you, Brandon, because my hypothesis is people listening would say, oh, making sense. I haven't got time for that, Brandon.
Correct.
So, you know, my calendar is full. I've got meetings back to back. When am I doing the making sense?
Yep.
What would you say to that?
Well, I would say, let's go back to Dwight Eisenhower, who was a president of the United States. I'm American, by the way. And he came up with what was called the importance urgency matrix, right? And so you can think about things that are important and urgent. Those are the things that we should do. The things that are urgent but not important, we should tend to delegate, right? And then the things that are not important, not urgent, we shouldn't be doing. The third neglected category are the things that are important but not urgent. And I put strategy in that bucket. And there's a lot of things in our lives that are important but not urgent, right? So if you're 20 years old, your super is probably not urgent, but it's important, right? So we need to spend time thinking about that. And so this is sort of what I try and teach my students and my executives, is that strategy and how we spend time thinking about it is important but not urgent.
What is the role of the middle manager?
I personally think the middle manager is the unsung hero in organizations because they have to deal with so much, right? There's a great simple model that a guy named Jackson Nickerson, who's a professor in the United States, taught me. And he talks about this idea. We talk about buy-in in organizations quite a bit, and we need to go get buy-in. And when you think about that term, the implicit connotation of that is, if you need to get buy-in, that means you're trying to sell something to someone who is oftentimes fairly reluctant to buy what it is that you're trying to sell. And so when we start mapping sort of the stakeholders that are in an organization, right, we have our, what are called our bosses, right, or our superordinates, and then we have our subordinates, or the people that we manage, and then we have customers and stakeholders, and then we have oftentimes blockers, right, or people that are sort of complementing the things that we're doing, right? And so instead of thinking about how do we get buy-in with all of these people, we need to think about it differently. So when we're thinking about our bosses, we should get what Jackson calls agree-in. So we're talking to our boss and we're saying, is this what you mean? Getting clarity on what the strategy is. Is this the objective that we're trying to achieve? Is this process suitable for what we're doing? Am I clear on this, right? So you're having this conversation with your boss to really try and understand, what is it exactly that you're telling me to do? Because oftentimes, strategy is ambiguous. Sometimes it's not clear. Sometimes the executive doesn't really know what they want, right?
Well, it's so all getting crammed in one page. There's not much detail in there, Brandon.
Correct. And so you need to get clarity, right? So this idea of agree in is making sure that you're not going off in the wrong direction, that your boss, and then you come back in a month and they're like, that's completely wrong, right? So agree in is important. When you think about the people below you, the idea there is be in. They are helping you make decisions. There are things that, of course, that you need to do, but there's also opportunity to have people be in the meeting that allows them to own that and to have a sense of what's happening, to feel that I'm involved in that. You know, with customers and stakeholders, we oftentimes need to get buy-in, which means we need to increase the attractiveness of what it is that we're trying to sell. And then the last one is this idea of complementers, or people that are blockers. And those we need to bring in, right? So bring them into the conversation. If they're blockers, right? Oftentimes, if people are, you know that they don't like the strategy or they don't like the initiative that we're doing, if you leave them out, they'll oftentimes create more trouble being outside of the tent than if they are in the tent. So as difficult as it is to have them in the tent, that's a really important process, right? To bring them, because oftentimes if they are very adamant about something, they probably have some kind of information that you need to know about and that is useful to you. So as difficult as those conversations are, they're important to have.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National with me, Lisa Leong. My guest is Associate Professor Brandon Lee from the Melbourne Business School. Later, the one thing you should do right now to implement your organisation's strategy. We're also joined by Rebecca Murray, who is a strategy specialist. She's got extensive experience in the university and the government sector, and she's the principal at Marlborough and Ferdinand. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Lisa. How are you?
Good. So how does strategy design and implementation differ when we're talking about not-for-profits or mission-driven organisations?
The strategic questions are just as relevant. So in the organisation that I chair, a not-for-profit, we still need to ask routinely, are we making an impact? Do we deliver value to our subscribers? Are we a trusted partner? Are our products and services meeting market need? Should we explore new territory?
So I know you worked for a long time at the University of Sydney. So what are your reflections on the challenges of strategy in higher education?
I would really emphasise the points that Brandon made about engagement. So universities are large communities of people with different disciplinary backgrounds, and that comes with, you know, different views and different opinions. And the people that make up a university, their collaborators, their partners, are really important voices to join in the strategic conversation. We do and have done, and I continue to emphasize the place of conversation, the place of consultation and engagement in the process. So when you talked about earlier the idea of a three-day retreat to develop strategy, that's certainly not the model that is one that I use or I think works in particularly knowledge-based organisations, knowledge worker organisations, where people bring freshness of ideas, they bring opinions. Talking with people and engaging gives you an early exposure to friction points, but it's also a process of building trust and bringing clarity about the future of an organisation, and people are at the heart of it.
What's your model that you suggest would work really well when you do have large numbers and you want to bring them along with you?
So I think there are a range of ways. You can actually go broadly to begin with and invite many voices in. And I think there are a range of tools in which you can do that online and through survey and the like. I think as you move through a process where you begin by surfacing ideas and then you start to sharpen them, there are methods to do that, I think, are better in which you bring smaller collections of people together for focus conversation, small focus groups and so on. And I think there are important stakeholders for any organisation. So whether they're your customer, whether your partners or collaborators, and I think it benefits by having those voices involved as well. But typically, my experience has been that often the strategic questions are broad to begin, and as you move through the process, both the formats in which you engage with people become tighter and smaller, but also the sharpening of ideas happens as you move through the design process.
Do you have any examples of useful questions that can be asked at focus groups? Because sometimes asking about what you want doesn't quite get the right result.
In a focus group, I would always set a series of propositions, if you like. So rather than coming with a blank slate, one of the first steps I would take before even beginning a strategic process is to really take the time to build your data, move through your discovery, look at the signals in your sector, in your organization, and really frame your strategic questions that shape the process, but always do come with a set of ideas or propositions rather than a blank page.
And Rebecca, you're the chair of SAGE, Science in Australia Gender Equity Program. Are you working on a strategy with them?
The strategic questions that we are considering at the moment, again, relate to what is our core purpose and reflecting that? How does our work reflect our mission? Are we providing value to our stakeholders? And our stakeholders at the moment are primarily university subscribers. What are their needs? How can we drive impact in their organisations? They're the questions that we're contemplating at the moment. But we're also looking at how we can have impact beyond the university sector, and that's in TAFEs across Australia, so new territories, new geographies. And we're also engaging deeply with medical research institutes. So how can our products adapt and reflect the needs of those sectors?
Thanks so much, Rebecca.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Lisa.
Rebecca Murray is the principal of strategy consultancy Marlborough and Ferdinand. Let's come back now to Brandon Lee, Associate Professor of Business Strategy at Melbourne Business School. Brandon, what are your reflections on what Rebecca has shared?
I think she's spot on. I think that the kinds of questions that she suggested that they focus on are really important and crucial questions. The idea of purpose is increasingly important for organizations, and I think, you know, most organizations will articulate what their purpose is, but most people are not connected with that.
What's the relationship between a purpose and a strategy?
So purpose is why we exist as an organization. A strategy is how we enact that purpose or how we fulfill that purpose. And so I think that's important. And, you know, that's one thing that I talk about in my implementation of strategy course is thinking about purpose and the why people come every day. And I think it's increasingly important for younger generations who are looking for more purpose in their work that they're not getting from institutions that used to exist and provided that in people's lives previously.
Okay, we need to do some jargon busters then. So what's a vision then?
A vision is, or an aspiration is sort of what we want to achieve. A mission is what we do. And a purpose is why we exist. We don't need to have all of these, right? I think most organizations...
Feels like some of those overlap.
Too much, yeah. And so I really opt for simplicity, but then the strategy is how we achieve either that mission or purpose or vision. And then the execution plan is how we're going to do that, right? So what are we going to do to make things happen that are aligned with those strategic objectives that we have outlined?
Each week, we have a segment. It's called Try This, where we ask our expert guests to nominate one thing our This Working Lifers can try out this week. It's like an experiment. So, Brandon, I'm putting you on the spot here.
Sure.
What is the one thing we can do to move towards implementing our organization's strategy this week?
So I would say slow down. Spend some time and figure out what are you doing? What are you doing every week or every day? Look at your schedule and say, how does that align with the strategy? And that slowing down may force you to think, well, what is the strategy? What am I trying to do here, right? So what are the choices that have been made around a strategy or an objective that we're trying to achieve? And then consider that vis-a-vis what you're actually doing every day, right? So what are we making happen? And is that we're making happen consistent with the choices that we've made, right? And that in and of itself is just that process and step of making sense of things, right? So slow down. And I oftentimes tell people, you know, in order to go fast, you have to slow down. And, you know, we've probably heard that a fair amount in the business world, but I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that when we don't know what to do, we need to slow down, and also we need to start listening, right? I put a picture of a hippo up, especially with my senior executives when I teach them. I put a picture of a hippo, and if you can imagine that, right, its mouth is gaping open, has this huge mouth, and then the ears are tiny. And I say, the thing that you don't want to be is a hippo, where it's all mouth and all talking and very little ears. So oftentimes we need to slow down, we need to listen to to other people in the organization that oftentimes we don't listen to because they have clues about what's happening in the organization that we maybe are not aware of.
Thank you so much, Brandon.
You're welcome.
Brandon Lee is the Associate Professor of Business Strategy at the Melbourne Business School. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nam, Melbourne. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can like or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us while you're there. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, don't be a hippo.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.